on today's episode of May the Record Reflect.
As lawyers, we tend to create our arguments in a deductive fashion, A plus B equals C, and people just don't think that way. We think inductively. And this means that when you present that A plus B deductive fashion, the conclusion's at the end. So the judge and the jury, they have to remember everything that you tell them. But if they know where you're going, they can better able to follow and they can retain the importance of each of your key points.
That was Judge Matt Williams, and this is May the Record Reflect. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the podcast. I'm Marcy Mangan, and for today's episode, I've got something a little different and a lot of fun. It's a compilation of advice and observations that judges in the NIDA community have shared with me, and which I've squirreled away over the past year, that now I get to share with you. It's always really interesting to hear what impressions judges have formed from their vantage point on the bench, especially when those impressions yield a little nugget of information or advice that you can tuck into your back pocket and remember the next time you're in court, or at least think about the next time you're not, like now. Today's contributors are NIDA faculty members or members of our Board of Trustees. You might recognize some names because they've appeared as expert presenters in our webcasts or as guests here on the podcast. All of them are really experienced former trial lawyers themselves who pivoted to the bench, and someone who you might just practice before in your jurisdiction or learn from in a NIDA classroom. I'm pleased that they wanted to share their thoughts with you, so let's go. The first question I asked our judges is, what do you expect counsel appearing before you to know or to do before setting foot in your courtroom? Judge Amy Hanley is a district court judge in the 7th Judicial District in Lawrence, Kansas. She's a former criminal prosecutor who you might have seen discussing a high-profile murder case a few years ago on Dateline NBC. She's also been a guest of the podcast a couple of times now, as well as a webcast presenter. What does she expect from counsel? Let's hear it.
I expect counsel to come watch me in court or ask around. I shouldn't be a complete unknown. You don't want the judge to be an unknown quantity. I have procedures and protocols that aren't listed in the local court rules. You want to know how I run the show. And if you do this, you'll be prepared, the hearing will be efficient, and your client will be impressed. So that's my tip. Come watch my courtroom.
In his many years on the bench of the Superior Court of Arizona, Judge Christopher Witten has presided over a variety of dockets, from civil and criminal to family court, tax court, and currently juvenile court. He's also the longtime program director of our San Diego Trial Skills Program, and his advice takes us back to what is sometimes overlooked, the deeper into practice you get, and that's the basics.
My expectations of lawyers in our courtroom. Strangely, what comes to mind is not the legal stuff. We expect you to know the law that applies to your case, know the facts. Instead, my expectations focus on how you conduct yourself in the courtroom. And really, they're things you should have learned in the sandbox as a child. Be nice. You can be zealous and still be nice. In fact, most of the good lawyers are. If you make a mistake, own it, apologize for it, and move on. Treat others with respect, and not just the jury, not just the judge, but my staff, your staff, the security guards downstairs, everybody. When someone else is talking, don't interrupt them. Don't roll your eyes or gesticulate. Bonus advice, these are not just my expectations. These are the expectations of the juries who decide your case. And when we talk to them, these are the things they use to determine which attorneys they find to be credible.
Judge Mark Drummond is a name familiar to the podcast. He's a NIDA program director, does one-on-one coaching, and also serves on the board of directors for the NIDA Foundation, which is our charitable arm that awards tuition scholarships to public service lawyers and trial attorneys experiencing financial need so they can attend a NIDA training program. Judge Drummond is now retired from the 8th Judicial District in Illinois, but that doesn't mean he doesn't still have thoughts. His advice is a real time saver. Let's listen.
Judges are very idiosyncratic. There are some judges who have lists of rules for their courtroom. I really only had one, and it related to exhibits. I told the attorneys that before they tried a jury case in front of me, I wanted them to have multiple copies of the exhibits. I wanted to have one myself in case there was an objection. I wanted the questioning attorney to have one, opposing counsel to have one, the witness to have the original exhibit, and then when the exhibit was admitted, either by stipulation or agreement or a foundation was laid, then a method by which the jury could see it, whether it be on an overhead projector, on a PowerPoint, or perhaps the jury notebook. What this eliminated was the exhibit dance in the courtroom. It saved time. You didn't have counsel on the other side saying, "What exhibit are we talking about? I haven't seen it. May I please have that?" If there was an objection, I could rule on it because I had it in front of me. So that was my one rule. I wanted multiple copies of the exhibit and everybody to have it in hand because it simply saved time.
If you tuned in to last month's episode, you're going to recognize this next voice. We can't get enough of Judge Ruth Rocker McMullen. As you remember, she's seated on the Gwinnett County Magistrate Court in Georgia, and she's back to tell us what she expects from counsel appearing before her.
I expect counsel to know what their issues are and narrow it down before they come in. Oftentimes, they come in with everything they filed initially in the first case pleadings, and it's a dozen issues, and really they've narrowed it down to one. So we don't need to talk about the other 11. Narrow it down and tell me, you know what you want when you come in.
You heard him in the intro, and now here's his tip. Judge Matt Williams, who is seated on the King County Superior Court in Seattle, is one judge who was ready for the quick pivot to online courtroom action a couple of years ago when COVID broke out and curtailed face-to-face motions, hearings, and trials, and, well, basically everything else. He's been at the leading edge of embracing virtual meeting technology in the courtroom, not just as a way to have continued on with court business in the face of the pandemic, but also just in general, as a way to make the courts more accessible to all who are served by them. Here's what Judge Williams has to offer.
Well, really the most important thing, I think, is to remember that remote advocacy skills are now a part of our world. And lawyers that want to succeed, then have to have two sets of skills, one for in-person hearings and trials, and one for remote proceedings. The reality is this. Remote proceedings are here to stay in some fashion, and some part of your pretrial or your trial process is going to use remote technology. So prepare. The first time you use Zoom or whatever platform your court is using should not be when you sign into the hearing. The first time you attempt to screen share should not be during the hearing of the trial. Practice, 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 prepare. And understand that as you're preparing, you're doing the same thing in remote advocacy as you're doing in in-person advocacy, but the platform is just a little different. So think ahead so that your presentation goes smoothly. Consider how you're going to get exhibits to remote witnesses, how you're going to get them into evidence, how you're going to show them to your finder of fact. By the way, there's five ways of doing that. And understand the visual. The box that you're presenting in is smaller. Aggression, which might play well in a big courtroom, it just doesn't play as well because you're sitting 3 feet away from the decider as well as the witness. So aggression doesn't play well, but substance and civility plays very well. Overall message, when you're dealing with virtual technologies, and you will in some fashion, more preparation, less improvisation. Good news is, in all virtual proceedings, you have much greater control of the visual and the substance. You just have to prepare. Use that control.
My next question for the judges is, what's the most common mistake you see lawyers make in the courtroom? Judge Williams is on a roll. Now he's got advice to counteract a mistake he sees all the time that makes it harder on the judge and or jury. What's the mistake and his advice? Let's listen.
The most common mistake is treating argument in motion or trial like your novel. Trust me, you're not that interesting. And advocacy isn't a mystery novel. The first words out of your mouth once you identify who you are and who you represent is, what do you want me, or the jury, what do you want us to do? We tend to, as lawyers, we tend to create our arguments in a deductive fashion, A plus B equals C, and people just don't think that way. We think inductively. And this means that when you present that A plus B deductive fashion, the conclusion's at the end. So the judge and the jury, they have to remember everything that you tell them. But if they know where you're going, they can better able to follow, and they can retain the importance of each of your key points. So tell your judge or jury what you want them to do. It keeps you focused. It helps them understand why you're telling them what you're telling them. And it also makes your argument about the decider, whether it's your judge or your jury. So instead of becoming someone that's just talking at them, you become their partner, because ultimately you're helping them perform and do their job.
Judge McMullen is on a roll too. Here's the most common mistake she sees in her courtroom.
The most common mistake I see lawyers make is not having their evidence properly organized so they're prepared to enter it into evidence, whether that's exhibits or physical evidence. They haven't established a proper foundation. They don't have the proper person under subpoena. They haven't obtained stipulations from the other side to get this evidence in. And so now you have something that is essentially crucial to your case that you can't tender into evidence because you don't have the proper foundation. That's a huge, huge mistake that can have devastating effects. And I see it a lot.
Next is Judge Marion Gaston from the San Diego Superior Court. Before taking the bench in 2015, she was a deputy public defender with the Office of the Primary Public Defender of San Diego County, where her experience helped her to create a restorative justice diversionary program. She also conducted research into the high prevalence of trauma in the lives of incarcerated minors, and helped develop a method for assessing fetal alcohol syndrome in detained youth. Here's what Judge Gaston has to say about dealing with witnesses.
The most common mistake that lawyers make in my courtroom is asking witnesses questions in a non-strategic way about things that either don't matter or are already part of the record. Both directs and crosses need to be targeted. Disorganized and poorly planned witness exams are a waste of everyone's time, the lawyers, the parties, the witnesses, and the jury.
Next up is Judge Sam Sheldon. He's a magistrate judge for the United States District and Bankruptcy Court in the Southern District of Texas in Houston. In an interview with his alma mater, the University of Houston Law Center, Judge Sheldon shared that he knew he wanted to become a lawyer after he saw Paul Newman in a David versus Goliath role in The Verdict. He was just 12 years old. What's the most common mistake he sees in his courtroom? Well, there are a few.
The question that I'm answering, what's the most common mistake you see lawyers make in the courtroom? The failure to get to the point. Many lawyers love to speak but are not listening. They fail to answer the question that I ask. Are providing the information they want to receive, but does not answer my question. Additionally, be precise. You appear before me for oral argument. The response to my question should ideally be 30 seconds, never exceed 50%. And you should assume that I've read your brief. So if I'm asking my question, it's because it wasn't answered in your brief. So if your answer to my question is providing me with information from verbatim from your brief, which is not going to help me, always give me the opportunity to ask you to provide additional information. Remember, less is more. Finally, please don't repeat yourself. Lawyers tend to think that people do not absorb information unless they hear it multiple times. This is not true with me. Telling me the same thing multiple times does not help me.
Judge Nancy Gertner is back on the podcast to tell us what mistakes she commonly saw in her courtroom. She retired from the United States District Court of Massachusetts in 2011 and presently teaches at Harvard Law. Her book, Incomplete Sentences, just came out and is a reflection on mandatory minimum sentencing on the lives of the men who came before her during her 17 years on the bench. Let's listen to what Judge Gertner has to say.
When the law gets ridiculously technical, in discrimination law, there's a body of law about stray remarks, right? You say the N-word once, it's a stray remark. You call a woman the C-word, it's a stray remark. And I would have lawyers who would say, yes, it's stray. The other side would say, no, it's not stray. And no one got back and said, what the hell does this mean? We are applying rules that, you know, I know they're in the precedents, but they really, what do they mean? And give me some sense of the wider picture. I said that over and over again, or after the federal sentencing guidelines became advisory, I had a very serious murder case. And the lawyer got up and said, well, Judge, I still think this should be a 32 rather than a level offense level 31. And I said, why did he do it? Why did he do it? Let's have a discussion about what is really going on. And that can animate my approach to the case. Again, it's a version of what I've said in other settings, which is it's almost as if you have to get the judge to be a motivated decision maker. And a motivated decision maker is one that thinks there are real stakes involved here other than just words on a page. And that's what I've criticized more lawyers for than I care to mention.
Judge Witten rejoins us from Maricopa County to kick off my next question, which is, what is the most impressive or memorable, in a good way, thing that you've ever seen a lawyer do at a trial you presided over? Judge Witten tells the story of an unforgettable case that came before him that involved the wrongful death of, well, I'll let the judge tell you himself.
The most impressive thing I've seen a lawyer do in trial is listen and pivot. It's the wrongful death case of Salty Kaufman, an adult scarlet macaw parrot with a huge vocabulary, a pleasant disposition, and beautiful plumage. The issue of whether the vet had committed malpractice was the main focus of all of the attorneys throughout almost the entire trial. Ultimately, the jury found that he had committed malpractice, that malpractice had caused Salty's death. Although the plaintiff sought damages, including his emotional distress, his pain and suffering, and his loss of Salty's companionship, ultimately, he was only allowed to recover the replacement value of Salty. The plaintiff's first expert witness had done a necropsy on Salty. I'm not sure if I'm saying that right. It's a animal autopsy. He'd done a necropsy on Salty and opined that the vet's negligence had in fact caused Salty's death. He mentioned almost in passing that Salty did have a enlarged heart that ultimately would have been fatal, but that hadn't been the cause of her death. The plaintiff's second expert testified that Salty, with this beautiful personality, plumage, huge vocabulary, was worth more than $100,000. On cross-examination of that second expert, the defense attorney asked, how much would you pay for that same parrot if you knew that it had a fatally enlarged heart? Answer, nothing. verdict was for the plaintiff, but the jury awarded damages of nothing. And if you think I'm making this up, it's all in 222 Pacific 3rd, page 272.
Next, I heard from Judge Mindy Solomon. She's a criminal trial judge in Broward County, Florida, and she describes a time when a criminal defense attorney used an unusual demonstrative aid at just the right moment at trial.
I was trying a possession of cannabis case a very long time ago, and the lawyer that was trying the case in front of me had a very small amount of marijuana. And what was most memorable about it is she was persuasive, and she took a piece of paper and ripped it up in probably 50 pieces and threw it in the air and said, it doesn't matter the amount of cannabis you have. If you even had this much, you'd be guilty. Obviously, it was impressive to me. The reason being she used a piece of paper to be persuasive as a demonstrative aid in a criminal trial closing argument. And just so you know, verdict was guilty. So using demonstrative aids or evidence in closing argument is really, really persuasive.
And Judge Gertner's back to share one of her memories. Here it is.
I had a patent case involving a man who had somehow managed to patent a glove with a stick in it to basically protect against skier's thumb. And it was extraordinary that it was patented. In order to show how ridiculous the patent was, the lawyer had the associate in the case sit with a woman who regularly made these splints. And she made a splint for him right in the courtroom. And it was a very simple gesture, which is, this is patentable. Excuse me, Mr. Smith, would you sit down? Give me your thumb. Let me show you how I can do this with Velcro and a stick. And it was fabulous. It also helped that the expert's name was Maud and looked like a mother, a grandmother. So Maud's splinting won the case.
My next question is, what is the nuttiest thing you've ever witnessed during jury selection? Justice Lee Edman is the presiding justice of Division 3 of the California Court of Appeal, 2nd Appellate District. She's been a member of NIDA's Board of Trustees since 2012 and currently serves as our board president. When I scrolled through her bio to look at her service record and list of accomplishments throughout her career, I scrolled and scrolled and scrolled. There is little she hasn't done or seen, as she's about to tell you.
I wanted to answer the question, what's the nuttiest thing you've seen during jury selection? And it relates to a juror's response to a question. We always start with the standard set of questions to the jurors. What's your name? Where do you live? What do you do? That sort of thing. She answered all those and then answered what her current spouse did and was asked if she was ever married before. She answered yes. And then was asked, well, what did your former husband do? And her response was, a whole lot I didn't know about. Let's just say that brought the whole house down. Those are the kinds of things that cause a jury to be totally bonded.
Judge McMullen has seen some things at court she can't forget either, including this caper.
We had a trial one time, and it was a potential juror was being interviewed, and she had raised her hand to say that she cannot be impartial. And so we were doing some particularized questioning of her on why she can't be impartial. And she said, well, because I love Law and Order. I watch it religiously. I watch every episode, every season. I believe it's all true. And the judge said, well, you understand that that's a fictional show. Yes, I understand, but I just love it. I love everything about it. I love the prosecutors. You understand those are actors. Yes. Well, what do you do for a living? I'm a board certified plastic surgeon.
Mic drop.
So the judge was, you know, so you're a board certified plastic surgeon and you can't separate fact from fiction.
Were people laughing?
And she actually said, no, I can't. People were irritated because they felt she was just trying to say the magic words to get out of jury duty, which she did say the magic words. But this judge has been around the block a few times. So the judge said, you've said the magic words to get out of jury duty. You've said you can't be fair or impartial. So I have to strike you, but I can also hold you in contempt if you don't come back. And so she made her come back every day that the trial was being conducted, and she had to come back and stay until the jury reached a verdict.
And finally, what's the podcast without our signature sign-off question? You know the one. What's a high-profile case you wish you had presided over, whether present day or in the past? And Judge Mindy Solomon is back, getting the last word in on this episode. She answered this question not only literally, but literarily too. What do I mean by that? I will have her tell you herself.
All right, truth be told, To Kill a Mockingbird, if I could sit and watch Gregory Peck all day argue something in front of the jury, that would make my day. Also, talk about somebody that can connect with the jury, that would be him.
I hope you've enjoyed listening to this episode. A special thanks to all the judges who took time out from their busy docket to phone in and share their views, suggestions, and stories with us. This was a fun one for us to put together, and I hope to be bringing another such episode like this to you next year. In the meantime, I do want to direct you to two similar compilation episodes that we released last year to mark NIDA's 50th anniversary. The episodes are called 50 Tips for 50 Years, Parts 1 and 2, and the questions are different, and the answers came from a wide variety of trial lawyers, judges, and law professors from all across the country and in different practice areas. Quite fun. So if you'd like to check those episodes out, please look for the links in the show notes. And I've said it before, and I will say it again. If you've enjoyed this episode, please leave us a review. The reviews on Apple Podcasts help put May the Record Reflect in front of listeners looking for this type of content, which spreads the word about the little podcast that could. You're also welcome to email us directly at customerservice@nida.org. I'll be back in a few weeks with another interview with a legal luminary among us. I hope you'll be back too. Until then, best of luck to you in your depositions, trials, motions, and hearings. Thanks for listening.
May the Record Reflect is a NIDA Studio 71 production. NIDA, we are advocacy enhanced, mentorship reimagined. Welcome to the community.